Okay, the parish is called Ki Tavo. And in Ki Tavo, Ki Tavo is one of the strangest, there is one of the strangest parashiyot in the Torah. I prefer that we sit separately, but I don't know how to do it exactly. Alright, that doesn't matter for today, somehow. So the psukim say this. Oh, that's good. Exile the men. Tov. Vayetzat. What? That's what the women say, but... No. Okay. The pasuk, the psukim say this. Perikav Zion. Vayetzav Moshe v'ziknei Yisrael et ha'am le'mo. Shamo et kol ha'mitzvah.
So this is like a general kind of a directive. Shamor, keep, watch over the mitzvot. Keep the mitzvot properly.
Now, Bnei Yisrael are in Arvot Moav, which is on the eastern side of the Jordan River, sort of north of Yam HaMelech, right? Opposite Jericho. So, that's where they are. He says, when you go over the Jordan River, El HaAretz Asher Hashem Elokech Lotein Lach, right? This is stressed again and again in the book of Dvarim. Vakimota Lecha Avanim Gedolot. You take big stones, Hakimota, means you stand them up somehow. Vakimota lecha avanim gedolot v'sadete sadeta otam b'sid. And then you whitewash them. You whitewash the stones, or you cover the stones with whitewash. That's what it means. So they all look white now. V'katavta aleihem et kol divrei haTorah hazot ba'ovrecha. And you'll write the entire Torah on these stones, be'ovrecha, when you go across the Jordan River. Lema'an. Now what's supposed to follow is an explanation about why are you doing all this? Why are you putting up stones? And why are you writing the Torah on these stones? Lema'an. Asher tavo la'aretz, asher yishev lechech, dotein lecha, eretz zavat chalav udvash. Ka'asher diber Hashem Elokei Avotecha Lach. So that seems that setting up stones and whitewashing them and then writing on them the words of the Torah is some kind of a condition, a precondition to getting Eretz Yisrael. You ought to get to Eretz Yisrael, do this. So up to now we have we might have some technical problems, like how many stones does it take to write the entire Torah on? And how did they write it on this whitewashed stone? The Torah talks about this as if it was the most obvious thing imaginable. And the tzivui is that hakimot lecha avanim gedolot. How many avanim? Doesn't say. I guess as many as it takes to write the whole Torah. So here they are, they go across the Jordan River someplace or other, and they're all like waiting, and people are collecting stones and whitewashing them and starting to write. How long does it take to write a Sefer Torah? Today, it generally, a sofer stam, takes them a year to write a Sefer Torah. That's a reasonable amount of time. So I guess if you had a lot of people starting from different places, every stone was a different book, or every stone was a different chapter, I have no idea. It's hard to imagine what it is that the Torah is talking about. Then it says, Vayab ovrechem et hayarden. After you pass over the Jordan River. Now in Jewish history, this is how it happened. They went from Arvot Moab to Eretz Yisrael, led by Yehoshua ben Nun, right? Moshe Rabbeinu had already died in Arvot Moav.
So Yoshua ben Nun is leading Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. The first thing they do is go to Shechem. Now, that's a long trek. Imagine today, everybody knows, from Yericho, you have to walk to Shechem. But that's a long walk. And it's hard for 600,000 or more people not to be noticed. I mean, someone is going to notice them. They're going, and they don't quite get to Shechem. But the Pasuk says, Tekimu et avanim ha'el ha'shenach b'tzavetchem ha'yom b'har eval. So you should know that outside of Shechem, there are two hills or mountains. I mean, not high mountains, but low mountains. Eval and Grizim, right? You know Eval and Grizim? Those are their names. Those are their names. So he says, you take these stones that you set up already, and you wrote, I think, you wrote on them when you crossed over into the, crossed over the Jordan into Eretz Yisrael. There's something confusing here. And then he says, v'sadeta otam v'sid. So either you didn't do it yet, or you're going to do it again. It sounds like when you cross over the Jordan River, you get these stones, you set up the stones, and then you whitewash them, and then you write the Torah. And then, after you do that, you go on your way to, to Eval, and you do it again. You set up more stones on Har Eval. Uvanita sham mizbech l'Hashem Elokecha, mizbech avanim, lo tanif alehem barzel. So this is already talking about Har Eval. When you get to Har Eval, you also build a mizbeach. And the mizbeach, it should be lo tanif alehem barzel, meaning that you use natural stones. You know, I mean, you might have to smash them from big to small, but you can't cut them into bricks. They're just like, you know, like some of the stone facings in Yerushalayim look like they are not made, like sort of just stones. So that's how you make a mizbeach. Mizbeach is made of stones that are not hewn, because the barzel, figuratively, means bad, war, destruction. So you don't want the barzel to come into contact with the mizbeach. That's what the Torah says. Lo tanif aleihem barzel. Now, avanim shleimot tivne et mizbach Hashem Elokecha, v'ha'a lita alav olot l'Hashem Elokecha. You build a mizbeach. Where are we building this mizbeach? In Har Eval, right? And we're sacrificing. V'zavachta shlamim v'achalta sham v'samachta lifnei Hashem Elokecha. This pasuk, which appears in the parasha of Har Eval, is the source of a very well-known halacha that on Yontif ain simcha ela bebasar. Yontif. The Gemara says that you compare the word v'samachta here in Har Eval to the words v'samachta bechagecha about Sukkot. Right, and you make a hekesh, and you say simcha here, simcha there. How'd they do the simcha in Har Eval? How'd they do it? They ate the meat of the korbanot. So how do you do simcha on Yontif, on Sukkot, on Shavuos, on Pesach? How do you do simcha? Ein simcha ela bibasar. Ein simcha ela bibasar. That's what the Gemara says. So you learn from this pasuk an incidental halakha. But it's incidental to our conversation. Our conversation is about what were they doing? What was it that God wanted them to do? Then it says the final pasuk, v'katavta al avanim, it called the Bria Torah Zot. Now, v'katavta al avanim, is this the first time? Or second time? Why would I have to do it a second time? It seems like a big effort. V'katavta al havanim, it's called the Bria Torah Zot,
Be'er Heitev. What's Be'er Heitev? Be'er Heitev, that's a story. So you look at Rashi. Let's start from Rashi, the last Rashi. Be'er Heitev. What does Rashi say? Shivim Lashon. The same thing that Rashi says in Dvarim Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey. Ho'il Moshe Be'er et HaTorah Hazot. Ho'il Moshe Be'er, Rashi says, Shivim Lashon. Now what does Shivim Lashon mean? What pray? It comes from Chazal. But what could Rashi have been thinking? What's Be'er Heitev? What's Shivim Lashon? Let's look at the Rashi, Hakimot Alach. You see? Hakimot Alach, Biardain. V'achakal totzi misham acherot, tivnebehem mizbeach b'haival. So it sounds like, according to Rashi, they should schlep the stones from the Yardain to Eval. Now, you know that they don't have so many natural resources in Eretz Yisrael, but stones they have. Any place you go, there are plenty of stones. What are the schlep stones from the Jordan to Har Eval, according to Rashi? He says, "V'tivne me'em izbeh b'Har Eval ben seitat omer." Gimel minei avanim hayu. There were three sets of stones. Like he changes a little bit what he says. Three sets of stones, because he's quoting the Gemara. Shnei masar b'yardein, u'kenegdam b'gilgal. Gilgal? Where's Gilgal? It's down there. I once did Miluim in Gilgal. It was very pleasant. No one knew where it was. No one came, nobody left. It was like, you know. Gilgal is north of Yericho. If you go on that road, you know, the Krisha, whatever it's called, so you see a sign, one of those J&F signs, it says Gilgal. Don't go there. I mean, unless you're really desperate, but you could pass it by. Kinegdam b'Gilgal. In other words, they did it first. B'Yardain. Kinegdam b'Gilgal. Kinegdam b'Har Eval. Kide'ita b'Masechet Sota. So here is Rashi. And Rashi's telling us that the true story of what happened is told in Masechet Sota. So let's look at Masechet Sota. Let us look at Masechet Sota. Where is Masechet Sota? Here, Lamed Hei, on the second page, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Bet. You see, it's the second source. Nimtzeita Ata Omer. Shlosha Minei Avanim Hayu. We're learning the Gemara. This is the Gemara. Right? It doesn't look like a Gemara, but it's a Gemara. The same words. Shlosha Minei Avanim Hayu. There were three kinds or three sets of stones. Echad Sheikim Moshe Be'eretz Moav. What is that all about? You know, just because it's the Gemara doesn't mean that you can take it lightly. I mean, what do you mean Sheikim Moshe Be'eretz Moav? Where's Eretz Moav? Eber Yadin. On the east side, right? The east side of the Jordan. That was before Moshe Rabbeinu died. Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember correctly, did not get to Eretz Yisrael. No? No one told you? Never. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get to Eretz Yisrael. So if he was Be'eva HaYardein, he's Be'eva HaYardein, Be'eretz Moav. Shenemar, what's the proof that Moshe Rabbeinu set up stones? Because it says Be'eva HaYardein, Be'eretz Moav, Ho'il Moshe Be'er. What does Rashi say in our Parashan Ki Tavo? Be'er means Shivim Lashon. What does Rashi say in Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey in Dvarim Be'er Heitev is also Shivim Lashon. So if the Shivim Lashon and Perek Aleph Zayin are written on stones, so I guess the Be'er Heitev of Moshe Rabbeinu was also written on stones, even though nearly a hint of this whole thing in the Torah. No, there's no mention of it. It's like the Gemara creates a story. We don't know where the story comes from. Ulahalan uomer v'katavta lehem kol divrei Torah zot. V'atya be'er be'er v'atya. Atya means Aramaic. Ba. It comes. Be'er be'er, like a hekesh, we say, what's true about this be'er heitev is true about that be'er heitev. Be'er be'er. Ve'chad sheik, that's the first one, right? Ve'chad, a second one, sheikibi Yeshua betocha yarden. In the Jordan River, you know, they walk through the Jordan River, you can do that. Not only Jesus could do it, but everybody could do it. There are times that you can walk through the Jordan River. No, it's split also. But that could be what it means, it's split. That you can walk through it. It does, it's not like the splitting of the Red Sea, where there were walls, because the Red Sea was so deep. But here, it could mean just that you could walk through it. Hekim Yoshua b'toch ha'yadein, okay? V'achad she'iki b'Gilgal. And the third one was in Gilgal, Shneamar, because that's where they got to. Their first rest spot was Gilgal. You know, Yoshua brought them through the Jordan River where they set up these rocks. And then they walked in Eretz Yisrael, they went to Gilgal. Shneamar v'chtei misrei avanim ha'eila she'lakhu. What happened to Har Eival? In other words, the Gemara says this. There were three times that these stones were set up Be'er Heitev. One by Moshe Rabbeinu on the eastern side of the Jordan River. The second by Yeshua ben Nun when he was in the, when they crossed the Jordan, in the Jordan, in the river itself, they set up these stones. And the third was when they got to Gilgal. And that's the end of the Gemara. I don't know. It was, from what Rashi said, it sounds like they schlepped the stones with them from one place to another, and then why would they have to write it again? That doesn't, unless they just had schlepped the stones and wrote new ones. So every time they had more stones. Why?
Does that mean they taught it?
I don't think they taught it, they wrote it. I don't know about, I don't know. Let's stick to what we know. What the Gemara says, you know, like we could, before we complete the story in some way. Now the Gemara says Tanu Rabbanan. Tanu Rabbanan means a Braita. Right, a Braita. What does a Braita mean? It's Tanaitic. What does Tanaitic mean? It has authority. When the Gemara quotes a Braita, it means it's something that's known. It's something that no one's going to say, oh, that doesn't exist. I mean, let's say, not never, but almost never, right? A Braita has authority. So what is this Braita? Even though the Braita is not halachic, it's agadic, nevertheless, it's an authoritative statement. It means authoritative, I don't mean that it's true. By authoritative, I mean it was known. Everybody knew this. And they all said, yes, that's true. That's what we learned. Right, that kind of authority. So, Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Katvu Yisrael et Torah. So, after all, the Torah says, write the Torah on the stones. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, how did they do that? How did they write? How did they write? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Al Gabei Avanim Katvua. They wrote on the backs of the stones, on the stone that you set up the stone, and you started writing. Shneemar v'ketavta al avanim et kol divrei haTorah hazot. They wrote on the stones. V'acharkach, you hear the Gemara? Are you following? V'acharkach sadu otan b'sid. And then they painted the words that they wrote with whitewash. So you couldn't see the words anymore. So why'd they write the words? If they had, you know, that's such a good kasha because we know that there's, we put on tefillin. What are tefillin? They're the place where you never can see what's written. Isn't that tefillin? Mezuzah? You all heard about a mezuzah? What's a mezuzah? It's up on the door and you can never see what's written. Right, that's like an interesting idea. Interesting idea. I remember somebody came to me and asked me a shaila years ago. If you make an open mezuzah, can you, like you take a piece of mezuzah cloth and you put it in between, what's that hard plastic called?
plexiglass.
Oh, plexiglass. You put it in plexiglass, and you put it on the door. Is it kosher? What? If it's not, it's not rolled. No, you could see it. You could see what it says, what the mezuzah says. So the Shulchan Aruch says, when you roll the mezuzah, you should roll it from the end to the beginning. You know, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. But does that mean that you have to roll it? Or does it mean that if you roll it in this direction? So this is what, you know, this was an issue. Anyway, it didn't catch on. His mezuzahs didn't sell. Everybody wanted the kind of mezuzah where you don't know what's in it, right? They didn't want the kind of mezuzah where you do know. Uktavim alav, and then he called the Rav Tarazot, v'achar kach sadu otam b'sit, amal Rabbi Shimon mitvarecha, heich lamdu umot shel oto hazman Torah. So Rabbi Shimon says, he says, isn't the idea that everybody should learn the Shivim Safot, Lishonot, that everybody should be able to learn the Torah? So if you paint it over with whitewash, no one's going to be able to see anything, and no one's going to learn anything. Amalo, Bina Yetera Natan Vahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't bother me with facts. This is how they did it. And you want to know how the non-Jews learned the Torah? They had these electric eyes in their eyeballs, and they were able to look at the stones, and they knew what was in it. That's the answer in the Gemara. Mitvarecha, he says, Abalo bina yitera natan bahem HaKadosh Baruch. They were very clever. They were able to even understand things they couldn't see. V'shigru notarilhen shelahem v'kilpu et asid, and they sent these professional guys who were professional writers, and they removed the seed, right? And then they bore it. They understood it. In other words, the Goyim had this opportunity, in spite of the fact that it seems unreasonable, they had the opportunity to learn Torah, and they rejected that opportunity, and therefore they deserved this terrible punishment, Zardinam Be'er Shachat, to a dried out well, like they were thrown into this, that was their punishment, Shayalahem Lelamed Lelmod V'lo Lamdu. Rabbi Shimon has a more reasonable position, at least we think, I think it's more reasonable. Al gabe seed katvua. First they put on the seed, and then they wrote on the seed, so you can see it. Katvua ad lebata, lemana shalo yilmedu etchem lasot, hey lamadata, shema yochozim b'tshuva, hayu mekablim otam. So the theme in the Gemara, I mean, there are two parts to this Gemara. One is, like sort of the factual part. Where did they do it, and when did they do it, and how did they do it? So we already have, the Gemara is insisting on two things. One is that Moshe Rabbeinu was also connected somehow to this enterprise, which seems to be the way Rashi learns the Pasuk in the beginning of Dvarim, Ho'il Moshe Be'er B'Shivim Lashon, and here he also says it B'Shivim Lashon, and he doesn't quote the Medrash in the Gemara, but you could say that the Rashi also thinks that Moshe Rabbeinu somehow participated in this event. He also did it. The second thing is, we learned what was the purpose. That somehow this was an opportunity for the non-Jews to learn Torah, and they didn't take that opportunity, and therefore they were sent away. Now, if we go back to the first page on the sheet, I just want to which? Is it acceptable? Yeah, of course. I'll mention that in a couple of minutes. Anyway, look at the Ibn Ezra. You see the Ibn Ezra? Vayitzav Moshe. Menezer says Vitzivu Hashem. It's not Moshe Rabbeinu's idea. V'ziknei Yisrael amar kein la'akel v'chein rabim klar eskirum shabo et kol ha-mitzvah. You see the second line in the Ibn Ezra? Umahi, what mitzvah are we talking about? V'akemot elecha v'onem gidolim, gidolot. It doesn't mean it's a mitzvah in the Torah which goes on for generations, but it was a mitzvah for that moment. At that moment it was a mitzvah. Those kind of mitzvot exist. Now listen to this. V'yomer ha-gaon zal. The Gaon is Rav Saadia Gaon. Right, he was quoted, he's quoted often by the Ibn Ezra. Rav Saadia Gaon was an important personality, and if not for the fact that he was eclipsed by the Rambam, would have remained, for us even today, a very significant person. But most people learn the halakha and the philosophy through the Rambam, and not through Rav Saadia Gaon. Even though Rav Saadia Gaon wrote things that are both halachic and philosophical. So listen to what the Gaon said. Vayomer Gaon Zal ki katuv alehem mispar mitzvot kemo haktuvot balachot gidolot binyan asarot v'yafeh amar. He agrees. What did the Gaon say? That it's not the entire Torah that was written on these stones. What was written on the stones? Mitzvot. Things you have to do. Like in the book called Halachot Gedolot. Halachot Gedolot is often quoted as Behag. Bet Hey Gimel Baal Halachot Gedolot. The author is not perfect, it's not perfectly clear, but it's a Gaonic work of Halacha which preceded the Halachic works of the Rambam and was very highly regarded both in Spain and in Germany and France, and everybody gave a lot of credence to the Bahag. So he said this is like the Bahag. They didn't write on the stones the stories of Bnei Yisrael and Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov and Yitzhak Mitzrayim. What did they write on the stones, according to the Gaon? They wrote just mitzvot, what the things you have to do. Things you have to do, not the things that are connected intimately to Am Yisrael, you could explain it that way, like the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Of course it's important for Am Yisrael, but it may not be so important for the Amorites and the Chiti and the Chivi and the Prizi and the Yebusi. I mean, what do they care about Yitziat Mitzrayim? But what they have to know is that the Torah has demands. They're called mitzvot, and the Torah has prohibitions. And they're called Isurim, and they have to know that. And the Ibn Ezra himself says, Yafe Amar. So the Ibn Ezra relates to the question of space. How did they write it down? And he turns to the Gaon, to Rav Saadia Gaon, and says, he writes so much. Not as much as you think. It's a lot less than it could have been. That's what Rav Saadia Gaon says. Okay, so according to Rav, to the Ibn Ezra, we've modified a certain problem. The problem was the whole Torah? And the answer is no. They didn't write the whole Torah. They only wrote the relevant Torah. Relevant to whom? Relevant to these non-Jews who are going to get it according to the Gemara in Sota. I have to believe that Rav Saadia Gaon and the Ibn Ezra knew that Gemara in Sota, right? We didn't discover it. So that's the Ibn Ezra. Now what does the Ramban say? Omar Rabbi Avraham B'Shem HaGaon. You see the Ramban at the beginning of Pasuk Gimel? You see the Ramban B'Shem HaGaon? Omar Rabbi Avraham B'Shem HaGaon Shekatvu Alehem Minyan HaMitzvot Kemo HaKtuvot Balachot Gidolot Ke'en Azarot. So, he quotes. What did Ibn Ezra say B'Shem HaGaon? That they wrote mitzvot. Positive commandments and negative commandments. That's what they wrote on the stones. And then he says, Rabbeteinu, V'tam Be'er Heitev, I'm sorry, Be'er Heitev is about the Ketiva. Be'er Heitev refers to the Ketiva, that the Ketiva was done in a very clear way. Rabbeteinu Amru, B'Shivim Lashon. B'Shivim Lashon.
Shirin Lashon means that they were able to clarify, they're able to do this. That's what Be'er Heitev means, according to the Chachamim. Two interpretations. Be'er Heitev either means it was very clearly done, the people who wrote it were very good scribes, or Be'er Heitev means Shivim Lashon. That's what the Ramban says. Umatsinu b'sefer Tagi. Tag is a crown. Is a crown in Arabic. It's also a crown. The Yemenite bikraot gedolot is called taj, crown. The crowns are the crowns on letters. If you look at the Sefer Torah, at the written Torah, you see there are letters that have crowns, like three little staffs coming out of the letter. That's called a keter, or a crown. Those crowns are very important. They have to be written in the Sefer Torah. So he says, Matsinu b'sefer Tagi. Matsinu b'sefer Tagi. This is a book of commentaries on the crowns. Like why certain letters have crowns and others don't, and why in certain places they have crowns and they don't. You could imagine that the Jews could go for this, right? This is a... So he says, Shaita, in the Sefer Tagi it says, Aita kol Torah Torah Ketuba Be'evid Breshit Ad Leinei Kol Yisrael Ketagi Yav Ziyune. In other words, not only was the Torah written completely word for word, against whom? Against Ibn Ezra, against Rav Sadia Gaon, who said, no, there was an abbreviated Torah. He says, not only was the whole Torah written, but even all of these strange things that, you know, like additions to the letters, were also written. In other words, to be the scribe, to write this up, you had to really be a professional. Couldn't just be anywhere. And he says, Misham netku hatagin b'kol ha-Torah. What does that mean? The first time that a Torah was written with tagin was on these stones. You remember the story of Rabbi Akiva? You know, like Kadosh Baruch Hu shows Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Akiva is learning from all these tagin, he's learning halachot, and what? Gemara Menachos, that's correct. So he said, so Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what he was doing. What's going on? How is he getting halachas out of the tagin? Like Moshe Rabbeinu never saw these tagin. And so here in the Sefer HaTagin, he quotes that the first time the Torah was written with tagin was this Torah that was written on the rocks that were covered with whitewash after they came into Eretz Yisrael, maybe even before. I don't know what happened to the Gemara that says that Moshe Rabbeinu also, that doesn't sound to me like that's what he's thinking about. V'yitachen shayu avarim gedolot me'od. The Ramban says it may be that these stones were very, very big. O shaya mimaseh hanisim. In other words, the Ibn Ezra tried to make the stone smaller, thinking that might make the whole story more reasonable. And the Ibn Ezra, and the Ramban says, why do you want to make the story reasonable? I mean, this is, you have to just go with the words. The words say they were big stones, so they're big stones. How big? Big. How did they do it? How did they carry them? How did they move them? How did they write? How did they do it? So he says, Vais and Nisim. What do I have to, I don't have to justify that. I don't have to explain it. It doesn't, you know, I'm not, I have no interest in that. Okay, we'll learn these two more sources. We'll learn first the Ketava Kabbalah. Ketava Kabbalah is written by Tzvi Mecklenburg. Shalom Yaakov knows it because he's a Talmud of the Gro. On Friday morning? Friday morning didn't happen yet. It's tomorrow. It was a different Friday morning. Anyway, it's a very interesting commentary. It's like for Litvox. You know, it's a commentary for Litvox, and because I am open-minded, I'm going to quote this Ketav HaKabbalah. So he says, LaRamban ayu avanim gdolot ma'ot. According to the Ramban, the stones were very big. Im shayu masan nisim lechtov alevi breishit adlenei Yisrael. He says, maybe there was a miracle that enabled the writing to take place. A third opinion. That's when they wrote the stones. Now listen to this. It's only a litva. He says, "Bini Hamaskil, my clever son." He says, "My clever son, Shmuel, Amar." Milat kol peh inyano kemo klal. That's what he said. And then he goes into a discussion of that. I want to skip. I mean, you could do this on your own, but I want to skip. He brings up an interesting question. I just lost the. Eino mot b'tzuvim mashmeret kol mitzvot haTorah kedamrinan Torah tzivalanu. Five lines from the bottom. You see five lines from the bottom? Six lines. The ein haumot, the second word on the line. Ein haumot mitzuvim al shmirat kol haTorah. When you say that the umot have to be aware of the Torah, it doesn't mean that they have to do the mitzvot. They have to know what the Torah is. Kedamrina and Torah tziva lanu, because it says in the pasuk that God gave us the Torah. So we're not trying to give it to the goyim, but they have to have a certain awareness. Lanu velolu motaulam ela al kilelata Torah medaber. They have to know generally what the Torah is. Vehu achdut haborei v'chamur. They have to know that there's only one God. And you only serve one God, and that's what the verse of the Nei Adercha Pshat, Hayinu Cholim Mefarish L'Shon Kol Divrei Torah Hazot, Kipirshu HaMefarshim Mibreishit Ad Leinei Kol Yisrael, V'Lashon V'Katafta Ala Navi Ala Avanim. In other words, we could also explain that what they wrote on these stones were the whole Torah from Breishit until Leinei Kol Yisrael, until the end. V'lashon v'katavta al avanim dome l'lashon u'ktavtam al mezuzot. You get it? What does it mean? What does it mean in the Torah when the Torah says k'tavtam al mezuzot beitecha? What does it mean? What are the mezuzot? The mezuzot are these, the doorposts. So where do you write the mezuzah? You write the mezuzah on the doorpost. You write the mezuzah on a piece of cloth. And then you put the cloth on the doorpost. What does it say in the Torah? What does it say in the Torah? V'ketavtem al mezuzot v'etech. But everybody understands that you don't write it on the mezuzah. You write it on a piece of cloth. And then you put it on the mezuzah. Right, that's everybody understands. Listen to what he says. L'shon v'katavta alav anim. These words in the Torah, v'katavta alav anim, that you should write it on the stones, domeh l'lashon uktavtam al mezuzot. Diktiva da'atam einena al ha-mezuzah atzma ki'im al ha-klaf. Al ha-klaf ha-nikba. You take the cloth and you put it on the mezuzah. You don't write it on the mezuzah. Hachinami, shiichtov kol haTorah b'reishit lein kol Yisrael al klaf k'sefer Torah. He says maybe that's what the pasuk means, that they wrote it. They wrote the where they write the sefer Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu already wrote the sefer Torah. Gave every shevet a Sefer Torah. It was written on cloth, with dyo, with ink, by a scribe. And that was something that you could do if you had a lot of scribes working on it. And he says,
על הכלב הזה, החינמי שיכתוב כל התורה מבראשית על עיני כל ישראל על הכלב כספר תורה, ויקבען אחר כך על האבנים. And then maybe afterwards the avenue was like they have these things in European towns, like a thing in the middle of the square and you post announcements on it. No? What? A notice board. But it's round, right? A board is like this. I mean, this is like a stone in the middle of a square, which is often round, but they call it a square anyway. So they had this thing in the middle where you paste notices. You put notices on it because, and everybody knows that you go to that red thing in the middle of the square to get the notices because that's where they are. So if you take a stone, and it's a big stone, and it has, and you want to give a message. This is how the Kabbalah says it. If I said it, would be terrible. But he said it. He said it that probably the stones were just very big. So you'd be noticed, right? You remember Yaakov running away from Lavan, and they set up a stone. Stones were used for boundaries. Now, when you used a stone for a boundary, it had to be noticeable. You couldn't use a pebble. You have a big stone, right? So the Ksav HaKabbalah says an interesting thing. Maybe they even had it written. It was Sifrei Torah that they had from Moshe Rabbeinu, and they put them up on the stone, and that way people were able to come and see what it was that the Torah was about. Now, after all of this, we have a couple of questions that I would like to relate to. The Rambam says, at the end of Hilchot Melachim, that it was censored. It's a censored paragraph from the Rambam. The Goyim didn't like it. You know, the Goyim either owned the printing presses in those days or controlled them. And they didn't like this Rambam. The Rambam says, you have to understand that the Islam and Christianity are working for us, the Jewish people. And now this he doesn't say, but I'll add this. He says, you know, we're too busy. We have to learn Gemara and Tosfos and Halacha and cook and clean. We're busy. What are we going to do? Go and convert the whole world and to believe that there's only one God? So we have agents. The agents are Christians and Muslims, according to the Rambam. And they did a great job because they took all these idolaters, these idol worshippers and strange people, and they gave them a belief in God. They gave them a belief in God so that we are successful through them. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says he doesn't differentiate. You know, he lived in a country where there was a clash between the Christians and the Muslims, and that's why he had to leave, because they were all against the Jews. Even though the Christians and the Muslims are traditionally don't like us, but that doesn't mean that they're not working for us. You know, it's like, you could just think about it. That's what the Rambam says. This halacha, of course, in the new editions of the Rambam has been returned to its proper place, and you can see it to the last perek Hilchos Melachim, which means in the last chapter of the last section of the Rambam's great work on halacha. That's the first thing I wanted to tell you. The second thing I wanted to tell you was that when Yoshua ben Nun sent Miraglim into Yericho, right? So the Miraglim didn't do it. They got caught. And then they hid. And then they ran away. So you would imagine that you would say that the Miraglim were not a great success. Not only did they not do what they were supposed to do, but they made a deal with Rachav HaZonah that compromised them. You know, Bnei Yisrael, they had to take care of her family. They had to take care of them. They didn't get anything, but at the end she saved their lives, so they saved her life and all the family. So I would say that this project of Rigul, of spying out the land, was a bust.
And yet, when they came back to the camp, Yehoshua ben Nun debriefed them. And he said, well, what did you find? And what happened? And they said something. They should have said nothing. We didn't find anything. We were hiding in Rachav's house all the time. And then we ran away to the hills, and the police were running after us, and so we escaped by the skin of our teeth. What did they find out? Nothing. He said, no. Because in the discussion with Rachav HaZona, and the reason I keep saying she's a Zona is because she was like a regular person. That's what I mean. She wasn't part of the landed aristocracy. She was a person. And what did she say to the spies? And what did the spies say to Yehoshua ben Nun? We know. That's what she said. She said to them, and they said to Yehoshua, that we know that the Jews, B'nai Yisrael, are coming directed by God. We know that. We know that. Now, what was the issue? This is where I understand. What was the issue? The issue was, when can you go to war? Well, you can go to war if you're justified. I mean, if you, like, let's say, the people coming to kill you. So you can go to war. You can't let them kill you. I mean, you have the right to protect yourself. What if they're not coming to kill you? When does the war become a mitzvah? When does the war become a mitzvah? So the answer is briefly. I could also do this in a long time, but I'm going to do it briefly. A war is justified if the people who you're fighting against know that you come in the name of God. Then the war is justified. Because if they are denying divine authority, then you're allowed to go to war against them. Yehoshua ben Nun, he had this mitzvah of conquering Eretz Yisrael. But he would not do it, and B'nai Yisrael wouldn't do it, until they understood that the Canaanites were taking a stand against God, and not just taking a stand against B'nai Yisrael. So that the spies who came back from spying out the land with Yehoshua ben Nun, those spies said to Yehoshua ben Nun, look, they're against God. They're not against us. They're against God. And then Yehoshua ben Nun said, okay, if they're against God, then we can go to war against the nations of Canaan. So that you could say when they came to Eretz Yisrael, there was another thing that the Jews did. And they set up these stones. And on the stones they put the Torah somehow, one way or the other. Either like the Ibn Ezra or like the Ramban or like... And it didn't matter. They would find people who could explain what all of this was. And the idea was to make sure that everybody would know. And therefore they did it in the Jordan, and they did it in Gilgal, and they did it again in Har Eval, to make sure that everybody would know that they are coming to fight because God sent them to fight. God sent them to fight. And the last thing I want to say is on the second page, the Kedushat Levi, Rav Levi Yitzchok Mivaditchev, he says this, V'katavta al alavanim et kol devei Torah zot be'er heitev v'ayin v'rashi zal Be'er heitev b'shivim lashon. Like, we know all this already, right? You read the Kedushat Levi easily, but tzarich lavin matziva b'kan lichtovet ha-Torah b'shivim lashon. He says, why 70 languages? Which I say means that it could be comprehensible to everybody. It doesn't mean that the 70 languages were actually written. V'yivo'ar al-pi perush rashi zahal b'reishit. Kidei shelo yomru, remember Rashi asked that question from Rabbi Yitzchak. And he said, how come the Torah starts from Breishit Bara Elokim? Why doesn't it start from the first mitzvah? What's the first mitzvah? Achodesh hazeh lechem, yafeh. Achodesh hazeh lechem. And the answer is because the book of Breishit teaches us that God is in charge. So even if the Goyim come and they say, look, you kicked us out of Eretz Yisrael, we were here first. Right? You ever hear anybody say a thing like that? We were here first, and you kicked us out. So Rashi says, It's a correct ta'ana. What's the ta'ana against that? That God's in charge. It's true you were here first. And it's true that you have a certain kind of rights of domicile. But God decided that you don't have permanent rights. And God has the right to make that decision. That's what Rashi says. V'yivoa pirish Rashi zal b'breishit k'deish lo yomru v'hem omrim lehem kol ha'aretz. Uv'yitzono nitla mehem unitana lanu. And God made that decision. Take it from them and give it to us. Kapshata pashut. Kevan sheYisrael kiblu haTorah. Ulekach natan lanu et ha'aretz. That there's some kind of relationship between receiving the Torah, accepting the Torah, and getting Eretz Yisrael. V'zeh shamar Kodesh Baruch Hu lakim avanim v'lechtov aliyem haTorah b'shivim lashon v'vorem la'aretz kidei laharot lechol ha'umot lekach yichu Yisrael et ha'aretz. Everybody should see, you know, like what are the Jews doing here? It's in the Torah. It's because they accepted the Torah. It's because you did not accept the Torah. You rejected the Torah. Ki al shelo kiblu haTorah kol ha'umot. That all the nations of the world had the opportunity to get the Torah, but rejected it. Lakach yikhu Yisrael et Eretz Yisrael. So there's a kind of an announcement. An announcement being made to the entire world about the connection between Eretz Yisrael and Kabbalat HaTorah. And since we know that many, many mitzvot of the Torah connected to Eretz Yisrael, it's not so far-fetched to think that the Torah really works only in Eretz Yisrael, and the Ramban says that. The Ramban says that, Atziv lechem tziyunim, he says the reason you do mitzvot to Chutz La'aretz is that you should remember how to do them when you come back to Eretz Yisrael. But in fact, in its kind of most obvious way, doing the mitzvot are connected to Kabbalat HaTorah. So that the Baditshuva says, you know why they put up these stones? In order that everybody should understand that this is not a war about territory, or a war about priorities, or rights, or privileges. If you accept the Torah, you have to have Eretz Yisrael as part of the deal. That's what you also get. So whether you do it like the Rambam, you say like the Rambam, or you say like the story I told about Yeshua ben Nun, or simply summarized in the words of Levi Yitzchak Baditshuv, you see that there was a purposefulness in disseminating the words of the Torah that people should understand, at least if they could, that the Jews are not coming to exercise some kind of territorial imperative or to expand the empire, or something of that sort, but that the Torah both obligates them to be in Eretz Yisrael and gives them the privilege of ownership in Eretz Yisrael. Have a good Shabbos.